You're listening to DraftKings Network.
Hey there, boys and girls. Welcome to another edition of The Business of Sports with Andrew Brandt. I'm your host, Andrew Brandt. We're produced by Jack Connell, musical producer Sam Brandt. You hear that under us. And then, of course, we are presented, as always, by DraftKings. I try to give you about a half hour of unique insights into what's going on in the business of sports, business of the NFL primarily, but a lot of other sports issues as well. You'll get that all here. If you want to get more, go to the Sunday 7 with Andrew Brandt. I give you daily videos, I give you a weekly newsletter, and we meet once a month for a webinar on everything that's going on in sports, giving you a lesson, kind of instruction on what's going on. All right, we got a lot to get to in our little time together today. I want to go through some of the things recently as the business of the NFL gets into full gear with free agency coming up this week. We had the formal release by the Denver Broncos of Russell Wilson. Actually, we haven't had that release yet. I misspoke. We have an announcement by the Broncos that they are releasing Russell Wilson, and the rest we're going to talk about in terms of timing and impact. But from a football point of view, it's obviously a deal gone extremely south, maybe one of the worst deals ever if you combine all of what was given up for Russell Wilson, combine the draft choice compensation, the players traded, and of course, the financials, which I'm going to spend some time on here. There's probably no team in the NFL more all in on a player than the Denver Broncos were on Russell Wilson. And I still wonder what happened in March of 2022, 2 years ago from right now, because they hired, they meaning the Broncos, hired Nathaniel Hackett to be their coach. It was a strange hire, but when you consider he was and is very close to one Aaron Rodgers, who was having his own issues with the Green Bay Packers at that time and had been for a couple years. So what happened? It looked like that could be a union that happens, that the Broncos would give up significant resources to Green Bay to get Aaron Rodgers. And all of a sudden, it all flipped. Aaron Rodgers is doing this massive three-year deal with the Packers that turned out to be a one-year deal. And the Broncos have pivoted to Seattle and giving up this huge package of assets to the Seahawks. Two number one picks, a number two pick, two other picks, two players, all for Russell Wilson. So what really happened there? We don't really know. How close were they to getting Aaron Rodgers? We don't really know. I know Russell Wilson and the Seahawks kind of wanted to part ways a year before that, but didn't. And there they were, and the Seahawks get a haul. So again, no one's more all in. That contract did not need to be done. Now, of course, you can always say you want to make him feel good. You've got new ownership before he takes the field. Let's make sure he's happy, everything, etc. But he had 2 years left and he was whatever age, early 30s. He didn't have to. And they did. Think about if they didn't do that contract. He'd had an expiring contract, which would give him a lot of leverage normally. But not much leverage now because he's going to be in the same situation, a free agent out there that he could have been if they didn't do the contract. But they did. And it was a five-year extension, a seven-year deal total, which basically was a three-year deal because Mark Rodgers, who was on this podcast talking about the contract negotiation with the Broncos, was unable to get a fully guaranteed deal over 5 years, did get a three-year guarantee, and here we are. He's played two of those years. Now he has a year left guaranteed. So thankfully from the Broncos side, they resisted, as every owner and every team did since Watson, of giving a fully secured deal. And they're only on the hook, I say only, for one more year of cash. Now, again, they wanted to bench him to move the date where they also have to commit to 2025. He didn't do that. That's where they're getting out of the deal. Anyway, they owe for 2024. So what do they owe? They owe $39 million. That's the number for 2024. It's an offset guarantee. So anything he makes from zero to 39 million is offset against what the Broncos owe in 2024. So pick a number. If he makes $9 million this year from a team, the bill for the Broncos will be $30 million. They don't get a one-for-one cap credit until next year. The cap credit will show up next year. The cash obviously will be reinstated to the Broncos by the fact they're paying out less than $39 million. There's a lot of talk, well, why didn't Russell Wilson, his agent, take a minimum deal now over a little over $1 million and stick it to the Broncos? They have to pay the other 38, but they really were going to get more. So they pushed that into a guarantee for 2025. So if they were going to get 20 million, they pushed that 19 into the next year. So the Broncos are on the hook and they stick it to them and everyone feels great. Listen, that sounds great in theory. That's something people talk about, I guess, but two problems with that. Number one, what market does he have? Does he have much beyond a minimum market? Is he going to take minimum to stick it to the Broncos? Or is he going to take minimum because that's all he's got out there? So even if he gets a backup deal of $5, $7 million, is he really going to take a million now and make the team put $6 million in the 2025? Is any team going to want to be on the hook for guaranteed money for Russell Wilson in 2025? So again, that sounds great, but in theory, but in practice, is that really going to happen? The other thing is, yeah, stick it to the Broncos. Sure, maybe Wilson wants to do that. Maybe the agent do. But does the other team really want to stick it to the Broncos? I mean, the other team wants to pay minimum. That's fine. Yeah, they'd be happy to pay minimum. But they're paying minimum not to stick it to the Broncos. They're paying minimum because they can get Russell Wilson for minimum. And are they really going to load money into 2025 to offset that? No, I don't think they are. So this idea that Russell Wilson's going to play fast and loose with the Broncos because they screwed him sounds great. It's a good story. I don't think it really happens. Okay, so $39 million on the hook, cash. That's cash. Now we'll talk about cap. Because of this huge seven-year deal, it has all kinds of proration and stacked proration and proration off an option bonus after the signing bonus. And the bottom line is $85 million of dead money. Dead money is roster money for someone not on the roster counting on your cap. Okay. Russell Wilson, in a matter of days or weeks, will be off the active roster of the Denver Broncos. He will be on the cap roster for two more years. They will probably designate him a June 1 release, which is this mechanism in the NFL where you're actually saying goodbye in March but not transacting until June in order to spread that cap hit out. That would make it basically $35 million in cap charge this year, $50 million in cap charge next year. Think about that. $35 million this year for a player no longer there, playing for someone else, we think. $50 million next year for a player no longer there and maybe not even playing for someone else. The biggest cap charge ever, that's next year. Now, the biggest cap charge for dead money this year is, wow, $85 million. It wasn't that long ago. We zoomed past the $20 million dead money charge where I shook my head. Players like the Rams, Jared Goff, and Brandon Cooks. Then we got to the $30 million barrier, which Carson Wentz broke. The Eagles carried that on their cap. And then the last couple of years, Matt Ryan and Aaron Rodgers counting $40 million on the Falcons and Packers cap respectively. And maybe we thought, okay, someone will break into the 45 range, maybe even 50. This is 85. Now, normally when I manage a cap, you've heard me talk about this. I believe in conservative cap management, risk averse, meaning pay as you go, try to take your medicine as early as possible, keep flexibility for the future. That's how I would suggest managing a cap, and that's how most teams do it. You know, the outliers you read about all the time that are constantly pushing money out, like the Saints, they're not the majority of teams. There's only a few of them. Anyway, that's how I would do it. And in a situation with an Aaron Rodgers taking the hit on the $40 million last year, or the Falcons taking that $40 million hit to get Ryan off the books the next year. Yeah, but here's different. 85, you can't justify that. As the most risk-averse cap manager of all, I would say you can't. You can't justify taking that, which would mean trading him now or cutting him now before June. All of that would accelerate, $85 million. You can't do it. Even with the rise in the cap to 255, that's exactly one-third for one player. And there's more dead money charges on the Broncos cap. You just can't play with half a deck. You just can't do that. So I get it. The Broncos have to spread this out, but it just goes in the books as the worst financial transaction in history of the NFL when you've got $85 million left to account for on this contract, $85 million. And we're going to talk more about this in a minute. But again, this is not cash. The $85 million is not coming. He's getting $39 million. But he's not getting 85 on the cap. Cap is cap. Cap is accounting. Cap is not cash. Okay, so Russell Wilson now will be a free agent at some point, but it won't be transacted till June when he can formally join another team. The detritus on this contract is amazing. What were they thinking? Now, again, they didn't do the Deshaun Watson deal. They blocked that, just like all these owners. As Mark Rogers, the agent, told me, they yelled like every owner, outlier, 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 aberration, aberration, aberration. Not going to pay him like Deshaun Watson, but they paid him pretty strong. They'll end up getting 100 and whatever, 20-something million dollars, or 130-something million over 3 years. It's quite a deal for Russell Wilson. And I don't think Wilson's a bad guy. I think he's a pretty boring guy, and I think he's a little too concerned about not saying anything wrong, but he's an example of the polar opposites. Seattle got him early in his career on the most undervalued contract in the NFL, leading team to Super Bowls, making $600,000. Denver gets him at the other end of his career on the most overvalued contract in the NFL, playing poorly, making $40 million a year. Okay, there we are with Russell Wilson. It just goes to show you, you know, even for the best of the best, it never ends well. It doesn't end well. The Broncos, how are they going to be good? Will they just cut Justin Simmons, their all-pro safety? I mean, they're tearing it down. The question is, can they be good? Yes. If, and that's a huge if. They have young players, especially a quarterback, performing well. Young meaning cheap, because they're going to have a cheap team. With $85 million on the books the next 2 years, they're going to have a cheap, cheap team, just like the Packers did this year. And the Packers had $40 million on the books for Aaron Rodgers and, of course, a lot of other dead money. What did they do? They played young players. They had the cheapest team in the league, cheapest team in the league, cheapest group of skill players by far in the league. And they were strong because the young players played well, outperformed their contracts by a huge margin. Jordan Love, of course, did. Jordan Love is playing for whatever he was playing for, $9 million at the level of $45 million players. These receivers are outplaying guys that the Packers left, said goodbye to. Alan Lazard making $12 million, MVS making $11 million. These receivers are making $1 million, if that. So it's just it's the way to win. If you're going to be a team like Denver now, you better be able to coach them up, Sean Payton, coach up these young players, because they're going to be whether you win or lose. Not veterans, young, rookie contract, cheap, fixed and reasonable contract players. Okay. What we're going to see in the next few days in the NFL is all this excitement over free agency. You know my feeling, being with the Packers, free agency. Buyer beware. You know, I always ask the question, what's wrong with them? Why are the teams not wanting them? Why are the teams not going after this guy? The teams that actually had the guy for 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 years. We'll see. Some got franchise tag taken off the market. They were the best available free agents. And some, you know, will get the golden ticket, of course. And some leverage free agency to get these great deals from their existing teams, like Jalen Johnson this year, getting 60 over three. and a four-year deal, which is a good length for him because he'll get free agency again at age 29. You know, Chris Jones should get a huge contract from the Chiefs, but the Chiefs are notoriously take the good side of these deals. I've seen it with Mahomes, with Kelce, and it probably will happen with Jones too. Okay. But now we're in deletion phase. We talked last week about this $255 million cap, $13 million increase per team. What's happening to that? Teams are cutting right and left. Everyone's shedding. I mentioned Justin Simmons with the Broncos. I mean, pick a team. The biggest, of course, in the past couple of days is the Bills. The Bills shed players like Nyheim Hines, Jordan Poyer, Mitch Morse. Gone, right? And because they have non-guaranteed contracts, it's just all this contract money that goes up in dust, right? Well, the contract says he's supposed to make $6, $7, $8, $10 million. Gone. It vanishes without guarantees. So what? It's gone. And they got Von Miller to take a $10 million pay cut. Sure, he can get it back with sacks and playtime, but it's a pay cut. It'd be much better for him to have it, not have to earn it back. So they got $10 million out of him. They got $31 million out of these other guys. The Broncos, with a new cap that went up $30 million, just cut $42 million off their payroll. $42 million. For the largest expense of any team is player cost, they just cut that by, I don't know, cut their player cost by 20%, 25%. Crazy. Okay, so the deletions are happening now. No one likes to talk about that. You know, they want to talk about the sexy signings coming up later next week. But yeah, this is what the reality is. And these guys will now enter the market. And the market and free agency is going to be, in my mind, like it always is, with the $255 million, the big cap increase, or without it. Same thing. 10 to 12 golden ticket winners. Everyone else is playing musical chairs, trying to get what's left, trying to jump in teams, right? And some positions will ascend. We'll see if defensive end ascends. I mean, or defensive line. Nick Bosa got $32 million. I think, is anyone going to bump that, right? Corner, you know, looks like Jalen Johnson, $20 million. I think it's been higher than that. Receiver's been up to $26, $27 million. Will anyone pop that? Offensive line, $22, $23 million. Will someone pop that? But safeties, Jesus, $100 million of safeties went out. Contract money went out the door. You had I mentioned Simmons, the two safeties at Seattle, Jamal Adams and Quandre Diggs, gone. I mean, Dante Jackson, Carolina, gone. It's just, what a world. You have all these contracts that are meaningless because, again, no guarantees. So this is the tough side of the business of the NFL that people don't talk about too much. These teams can shed this. Now, teams can cut players in baseball, basketball, hockey, but they got to pay them. They got to pay them, right? And yes, the Broncos have to pay Russell Wilson, but he's an outlier. How many players have I just mentioned that have any money due? None except Wilson. None. So I'll try to keep a running tally of how much money is just out the window for these teams. It's probably going to be $200 to $300 million, maybe more, between the teams just shedding players and having nothing to worry about. So before the additions this week come the deletions, and there already have been a lot of them, and they're going to be a lot more. It's a tough world out there for NFL veterans. It really is. You know, despite what the CBA was supposed to do, keep veterans around and spread the money. I mean, league's getting younger. Teams are realizing the cap value of rookie players. 60, 70, 80% of teams now are on rookie contracts. All you have to do if you're managing a cap is figure out how to pay 10 players. You know, right? You're 10 elite players. That's basically what you have to do. Because 80% of them are already taken care of. All right. Let's move to unionization in college sports. For those who haven't been following, Dartmouth University men's college basketball team filed a request in February to allow themselves to be unionized. They won at the regional level. National Labor Relations decided that yes, Dartmouth can vote to unionize. Well, that vote happened this week, and Dartmouth men's basketball team voted 13-2 to unionize. And again, a lot of people saying, well, wow, does this mean college athletes are now union members and employees? Not yet. Let's hold the phone. It's going to take a while. Dartmouth is appealing, and they will appeal to the National Labor Relations Board in Washington. That will take some time. If they lose that, or if they win even, there'll be appeals into the courts, perhaps all the way to the Supreme Court. So this will take a while. The bigger issue is it is definitely another chink in the armor of the cherished mantra of amateurism with the NCAA. This sport, basketball and football, are becoming less and less amateur every day. The NCAA has all these suits circling, a suit about NIL, a suit about employee status, a suit from USC athletes about the same issue as Dartmouth, a suit about Fair Labor Standards Act. And then Jeffrey Kessler has brought a suit about pay for play, taking any restrictions off the NCAA. The problem for the NCAA is they had their head in the sand for so long, inertia lasted so long, that Charlie Baker, the new prez of the NCAA, now has to deal with that. Yes, Congress is interested in acting, but it's not a must do, especially with what's going on in this world. We're just not going to see it. So what happens? I don't know. I think that the NCAA has got to be proactive here, settle one or more of these lawsuits, and maybe, just maybe, institute some proactive version of collective bargaining. Because right now with the transfer portal and NIL basically as loose as could be, you basically have free agency without a salary cap. What could be worse than free agency without a salary cap? So why not go to the players and figure out how do we bargain and how do we create a salary cap and how do we create some enforceable guidelines? The problem, and I'm not a lawyer, I'm not a labor lawyer, is who are they negotiating with? Are athletes negotiating with their school? Are they negotiating with their conference? Are they negotiating with the NCAA? Are they negotiating with the media networks? How is this all going to be worked out? And again, it has to be smarter labor lawyers than I am. So we'll see where this goes, but Dartmouth is a step, right? It's a step towards another notch towards the end of amateurism. We're not there yet, but it continues to advance. Is it a good thing? Well, everything that's happening is a good thing for the top level of college athletes because of their freedom to move and their freedom to make money. Is it a good thing throughout college sports? I don't know. I worry about the non-revenue sports. I worry that there's not a bottomless pit. It's already showing. And there's donor fatigue with colleges, and NIL donors find it a little more sexy than giving to the school or the general fund or even the athletic fund. So we'll see where this goes. It's going to be an interesting time. My last thought here on this Business of Sports pod for this week is on Sunday, we learned of the loss of ESPN's, what else can you say, magnificent NFL reporter for so many years, Chris Mortensen. Chris died. He had been battling throat cancer for years. He thought he had overcome it. Obviously, I don't know if it returned, but we lost Chris. Chris is obviously revered not only by ESPN, but by everyone in sports media and everyone in sports, everyone in the NFL, from Roger Goodell to Peyton Manning all the way down, chimed in to give their respects to Chris Mortensen. Let me just share mine. I knew Chris a little bit as a team guy and as an agent, but I got to know him well when 2011 I was hired by ESPN to kind of break down the issues with collective bargaining and the NFL lockout in that strange year where the NFLPA had decertified and everything was in the court system. He was so gracious and so welcoming. Here I was, never been in media, never been on broadcast media. And I'm thrust into it. I mean, my first day on the job, I'm sitting between Chris and John Clayton and Adam Schefter breaking this stuff down at the Combine in Indianapolis. And I didn't know what I was doing, but Chris was always looking out for me and always trying to help. And when we did segments together, like a host and me and Chris on each side of the host, he would kind of defer, like, well, that's a better question for Andrew. I mean, who is that? Like, Chris Mortensen is deferring because he had no ego. He doesn't need to take these hits on SportsCenter or on NFL Live. He'd rather give them to someone that's learning like me coming up. So what a great, great human being. And I just remember the next year, 2012, he, of course, broke the big story. He broke many stories about Peyton Manning, but this is when Peyton Manning agreed to sign with the Denver Broncos in free agency after being cut from the Colts. Many teams were after him, the Dolphins, the Cardinals, Tennessee Titans, San Francisco 49ers. He went with Denver, and Chris broke that story, and it was the big story for a couple of days. And I'm watching SportsCenter just like everyone with the big news. And so then they asked Chris on SportsCenter with a huge audience, I'm sure, saying, the hosts of SportsCenter were saying, well, Chris, tell us about the contract. And he said, I'm watching this from home. He said, I think that's a better question for Andrew Brandt. And I'm like, wow, that's great. And 10 minutes later, SportsCenter called me. I did a phoner. This is a special guy. And sorry to say, was a special guy. Tough time in sports journalism. We lost Peter, of course, not lost Peter King, but we lost his column. And now we lose the life of Chris Mortensen. So sorry to end on a sad note, but that's the week in the business of sports. As always, try to give you this quick hit insights and perspectives I hope you don't find anywhere else. If you enjoy the podcast, please leave us a comment and a rating on Apple Podcasts or wherever you hear your podcasts. I really appreciate those ratings. The feedback's great to me. Always send me feedback. Andrew@andrew-brandt.com. If you want to support the podcast, Andrew-brandt-20 is how you do it on Venmo. Twitter, Andrew Brandt. Instagram, where I do reels, AndrewBrandt2. The Sunday 7, sign up where you can, sportsbusinessleague.com. I'll give you all the insights you want every day, every week, every month, with an instruction session as well. Thanks to Jack Connell, producer, my musical producer's son, Sam Brandt, at Boy Blue Tunes on Spotify. And thanks to you for listening. Share it with a friend. I hope you find this unique and differentiated content to help you along your way as you listen in your car, on your walks, with your dogs, wherever you are. Enjoy it. Have a great week, everyone. I'll be back during free agency week in the NFL next week on the Business of Sports with Andrew Brandt.